Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the regularly scheduled Committee of the Whole meeting. If we can get Alderman Hill to sit down, we're ready to go. My name is Chuck Brown. I'm an alderman for the First Ward, and it's my turn to chair the Committee of the Whole meeting tonight. So with that, I'll call the regularly scheduled meeting of the Committee of the Whole to order. With the recording secretary, please note that all the aldermen are present tonight, save Alderman Marks. Thank you. The first item of business tonight is number 2A, committee will have a report. This is continuing our regular series of reports from the various departments, and tonight we'll have a report from Mr. Unsch, Director of Community Development, on what's happening in his department. Mr. Unsch?
Thank you. Okay, thanks for the lights. Good evening. What I thought I would do for our departmental presentation this evening is to give you a little update on the downtown master planning process. We're now reaching a critical stage in the process where our downtown master plan committee, our advisory committee, will be receiving recommendations from our consulting team next month, which will then be reviewed by them, and then there'll be a continuing review at the public level and at the plan commission and council level. So we're kind of wrapping up or culminating this planning process. Just to start out with, the downtown master plan committee, the city's planning consulting team, staff, and stakeholders have been engaged in the downtown planning process over the past year. The goal is to prepare a detailed master plan and vision to guide the future of downtown Geneva. We've been involved in online and community outreach activities. We've reviewed and researched and analyzed existing conditions and trends. We've conducted a community-wide vision charrette workshop. All of this information has been compiled in a 100-page existing conditions synthesis report, which most of you have seen. A vision statement, proposed plan goals and objectives, and a draft plan and draft plan concepts have been reviewed by the master plan committee. Next month, the consulting team will present a draft plan to the master plan committee to be followed by a community meeting in October to gather public comments on the draft plan. Thereafter, the plan will be finalized and presented to the plan commission and city council for formal review and consideration. The entire planning process is documented on the Geneva Downtown Stationary Master Plan website, and a link to that website is on the city's homepage. So let's get started here. The existing conditions report that I mentioned covers a number of different topics that you see there, from past plans to existing land use and development to a review of parking, access, circulation, and transit. It reviews growth potentials in the downtown area, historic resources, there's an urban design analysis component, and downtown activity is assessed. It wraps up with an identification of the issues and opportunities in the downtown area that form the basis for formulation of alternative plans to consider. Community outreach has been a big part of this process, and I think we've had somewhere between 250 and 300 different individuals involved in some aspect of the planning process, whether they attended a workshop or a key person interview, or they might have just responded to the online resident questionnaire or business questionnaire, or provided some of their ideas using the online mapping tool that's on the project website. And we've used e-blasts or distribution emails to our Geneva weekly newsletter recipients as a way of getting the word out at different times on meetings and workshops that have been held. So the response has been very good. Key issues that were identified early on through that outreach process, I'm just going to go through these quickly, perceived parking shortage, difficulty in finding parking, diagonal parking safety on State Street, not enough retail employee parking on weekends. Pedestrian mobility was identified as an issue, particularly crossing 3rd Street and State Street. Redevelopment and preservation seem to be intertwined in this planning process, so we have a challenge of finding that right balance between promoting new infill development and preserving the city's historic architecture and character. Residential development, there's a desire for more of it. There's still a question as to what type, what density, and where that should be located. State Street was viewed as having a declining appearance in some areas. Streetscaping, the idea of extending Third Street and that streetscape treatment to other streets like State Street was discussed. Traffic congestion was discussed. Parking, there's a perceived parking shortage, difficulty finding parking. Diagonal parking safety, again, and not enough retail employee parking on weekends. Pedestrian mobility, safety in crossing State Street and Third Street. Wait a minute, I'm going the wrong way. Hold on. Duh. Future government. Here we go. Duh. That sounded awfully familiar, that stuff. Oh, boy. Future government facilities. Desire to see government uses remain. Business concerns. Perceived inconsistent enforcement of ordinances and city processes. High rent and taxes were identified. Downtown connectivity, a lack of a physical connectivity between the east and west sides of the river. State Street as a barrier, north and south. Additional residential development, Lack of entertainment options, lack of theaters and restaurants to attract pedestrians and shoppers. The city's financing and budget, interest in finding funding sources, new funding sources for implementing a future plan. And the need to coordinate business hours. Okay, so a big part of this study involves some analysis, looking at both our residential and retail markets. And what we did here is identified on the left-hand side the residential market areas, both primary and secondary market areas in and around Geneva. On the right, we took a look at the retail side and identified primary and secondary market areas within 5 and 15-minute drives of downtown Geneva, with the understanding that there's a broader market area also that downtown Geneva attracts because of its character and the nature of its shops that it has. There was a demographic overview conducted. Population change-wise, populations and households are projected to increase. The age profile, median age, is projected to be slightly lower. Income is projected to significantly increase. Age-wise, population age 35 to 54 is expected to experience a modest decline. And yet the older folks, 55 and above, are expected to grow very substantially in the coming years. Age by income, the number of households in lower middle income groups are projected to decrease as the number of upper income households annually increases. So what are the market implications of the demographic overview? Population growth will increase demand for housing, goods, and services. Household income growth will increase the buying power in the market area populations. And those empty nesters that are aging will increase demand for retail goods and services. And the group will also demand condominiums and townhomes, more compact lifestyles. The residential market component, first we just looked at the basic occupancy and nature of housing. We have a lot of owner-occupied housing, and we have a lot of single-family housing in town. As we proceed with downtown development and the future of the downtown, the trick will be here in finding ways of incorporating those condos and apartments that might and townhomes that might be more appealing to our aging population. Within the market analysis for residential, again, majority of the homes are owner-occupied, as I mentioned, but nearly half of all homes have been constructed in the last two decades, and about 65% have been constructed since 1970. So while we have this historic character, the city overall has a very new component to it. On the rental side, median rents are typically higher in Geneva than in Batavia and St. Charles. The downturn in the housing market has increased the importance of rental housing as a means of diversifying the local housing stock. And rental housing is typically a more significant component of housing within mixed-use development environments downtown. Construction of new multiple-family housing has virtually stopped in Geneva and in the surrounding communities. Dotson Place is the most recently built units with some apartments that have been built there, and there have been some units in St. Charles on the First Street project. Home sales-wise, nothing surprising here, unfortunately. But the number of sales and average sale prices have declined. And time on the market has also increased to 5 or 6 months on average. Now, the consulting team did a residential demand analysis and the focus here was on trying to come up with some demand numbers. So they looked at both condo and rental minimum required incomes. Market demand then was calculated based on looking at age cohort data, mobility index information, home ownership rates, and then determination of Geneva's market share based on a capture rate. So what we have here are condos and townhomes, 5 to 7 units per year within a downtown area is what's possible in a total city market area of 30 to 40 units per year. On the rental side, the rental market is more positive with absorption of about 6 to 17 units per year expected in the downtown area, but the total market area of the city has a much higher demand of 100 to 115 units per year. And much of this, I think, is influenced by what's happened in the marketplace with purchased housing, or owner-occupied housing, and the fact that there is such a small amount of rental housing in the city and in the downtown, that there's actually a real opportunity for rental housing based on market trends. On the commercial market analysis side, just a quick summary, downtown Geneva serves dual functions, both day-to-day needs of local residents as well as the surrounding region with destination-oriented retail. And I think we all know that retail success in the downtown area is directly tied to its historic character. Primary and secondary market areas have been defined, and they stretch out all the way down to Aurora and up north towards the Charlestown Mall area. Market implications for commercial and retail. Local retailers and service providers in downtown compete with Randall Road. Likewise, they compete with St. Charles. And regional destinations present competition to the south, east, and northeast. Areas to the west will experience growth. We're talking about the settlements of La Fox there. It's going to take a long time for that project to get off the ground, but when it does, we stand to capture substantial retail sales and benefit from that development. To remain competitive, the downtown must focus on its distinct character as a retail and dining destination. Now, we did a retail gap analysis as well. And within a 5-minute drive, an unmet demand for retail goods and services totals 47.5 million. And then in that secondary market, 15 minutes drive, 87.9 million. Most downtowns rely more on local population for customers, but downtown Geneva also draws from a strong regional base, which is kind of a unique characteristic of our downtown. So when the team looked at all of this information, they identified 3 market opportunities: specialty grocery stores within the downtown area, general merchandise stores of the smaller variety, and then limited service restaurants. We have the high-end restaurants, and there's real opportunity for the smaller types of shops and fast food. On the office side, downtown Geneva is part of the Lyle-Naperville submarket of the Chicago suburban office market, as determined by Colliers International, and they're a firm that tracks suburban office market activity in both in terms of development and leasing. Geneva office space is considered Class B or Class C space, which basically is saying it's not on an interstate highway, it's not a high visibility space, but these are office locations that are well-maintained, have good access, and good management. Lyle Naperville submarket has seen negative absorption and increased vacancy over the past 3 years, as has the rest of the region. So the office market really does not look very positive. For our situation, downtown Geneva office space is being leased at average rates above those in St. Charles and Batavia, and the total space inventory is 146,000. Typical size of space marketed is between 1,500 and 4,500 square feet. Implications with respect to the office market analysis. The submarket's fairly stable. Geneva office space consists of that upper floor space in these mixed-use buildings we have around the downtown area. Construction of speculative office development is really not in the picture for the most part. Office uses should be supported as ancillary uses to the ground floor retailers and restaurants that we would hope to attract. Now I've got a series of maps just to summarize some of the key pieces of information in this report. The existing zoning has some interesting patterns. The locations here along State Street, or it's kind of that pinkish tone, indicates the V2 zoning. The red, the bright red, is V3 zoning. The kind of bright green colors represent our three planned unit developments downtown: the North Riverfront planned unit development, the Old Courthouse PUD, and the Dotson Place PUD. And the purple reflects Burgess Norton and some of the other industrial users along Stevens Street. And then you've got those three yellow areas, primarily on the west side of the river, that really are divided into three separate neighborhoods that flank the higher activity uses in the downtown. And when you look at existing land use that was inventoried, you see similar patterns in terms of the uses. What I find interesting is that the mixed-use component, the brown, kind of the dark brown colors on that map, and the darker shades of red reflect that that mixed-use character of our downtown, where if you have more than one story of development, you've got this mix of retail first floor and either office or residential above. So that comes across very clearly. We've got about a dozen different government-owned facilities or agency facilities located within the downtown area. And as we have been discussing over these many months, there are many possible relocations of those facilities, and there's much being discussed within the community. As we move forward in reviewing the recommended plan, what will be very key here is trying to look for ways of building consensus around the uses that would be put to these various sites located throughout the downtown. Existing roadways are also covered in the report, and what's, I think, noteworthy here is we've got over 24,000 vehicles today traveling back and forth on Route 38 or State Street. What I find interesting is that with respect to both 3rd Street and 1st Street or Batavia Avenue, we've got traffic volumes that are very substantial on both of those streets. And while people view the state highway as being the dominant street, and it truly is, but we've got 8,900 vehicles a day on 31, and we've got about 6,700 vehicles per day on 3rd Street. So it's not a small amount of traffic that 3rd Street carries each day. And then we have existing parking lots, and we could talk all night about parking lots. I won't. But we are at a stage here where this is truly one of the more significant concerns that people raise. We have quite a few parking lots in the business district, and there are a number of issues that have been identified, but I think most importantly what our consulting team is saying is that it's not the overall shortage of parking that people seem to think that we have, as more as it is spots in and around the downtown in particular locations that offer some challenges. But overall, actually, supply exceeds demand. So we have downtown on foot, and the report gets into a discussion of some of the barriers and some of the problems associated with moving around in the downtown area. I think what's most significant here is the Fox River creates a barrier to east-west movements, and State Street creates a significant barrier to north-south movement, and those challenges we will continue to face as we move forward. Downtown by bicycle, we've got a lot of recommendations in our adopted bikeway implementation plan, and we need money to implement those recommendations. What's noteworthy is that bicycle parking, bike lane striping, and signage are some key components that really need to be pushed forward, and hopefully those kinds of items that are a little bit more affordable are something that we can work into future budgets. Downtown by transit, of course, we have Metro. We've got the two PACE bus routes. We have the Ride and Cane program recently established. The circulator study that St. Charles did calls for a call and ride service that would connect Geneva, the Geneva Metro station, with destinations to the north. And then we've got some opportunity sites that the report identified, and these are catalyst sites and primary redevelopment sites. And what we what we've done here with this, and our consulting team, I think, has done a nice job. They've identified sites that either because of either a pressing need or because of a potential impact that's really significant, they've identified those potential sites in red. The blue sites are other properties that perhaps offer some opportunity, and that would be either for expansion, adaptive reuse, or perhaps partial redevelopment or full redevelopment. And then this is the historic buildings survey, and I thought it was worthwhile to put this up on the screen just to point out that we have the red properties, which are the significant properties, that is the historic properties that have a very high quality of retention of their historic characteristics, or they're significant from a historic perspective, just based on the local history of the property. And the orange sites are contributing properties which embody some of the characteristics of the older area of the city and have some history associated with them as well, or architecture that's noteworthy, but not of the highest caliber as the significant sites shown in red. Open space, most of the open space is along the river, but there's not much open space within the downtown area proper, and we need to be looking at that carefully as we move forward. Activity generators have been identified, and the varying sizes of the dots reflect the significance of amount of activity in those areas. So, to wrap up here, we've got some issues and opportunities that have been identified through this planning process and will be looked at as we move forward in looking at draft plans in the coming several months. So downtown growth can occur by expanding boundaries or creating mixed use and infill development. Potential exists for more residential. Office development can occur, but the office market is not huge. It's really part, it's using this either converted building approach or making office as a part of some ancillary use alongside retail use. Redevelopment should consider a combination of adaptive reuse, building expansions, and building demolition and redevelopment. Fractured parcel ownership is a big part of the downtown area, and so parcel assemblage will be key to any significant development strategies. And figuring out ways of incorporating the east side of the river into the rest of the downtown area. Community facilities-wise, what everyone seems to be saying that's participated in the planning process is that we need to hang on to our CDB, our Central Business District functions downtown, and look at the potential for redevelopment and reuse of vacated buildings. Zoning-wise, we have a number of zoning districts, and maybe that can be simplified. The sign requirements are felt to be too restrictive by our business community, and the A-frame signs that are the portable temporary signs out in front of businesses have been viewed as an unsightly type of signage. Parking concerns are more about localized parking space supply and demand problems rather than about overall parking shortage. Transportation to and from the downtown is key for pedestrians, bicyclists, and motorists. We talked about safety concerns before there, and they are highlighted here where we've got an issue with State Street, 3rd Street, and the Fox River. Find ways to implement the Bikeway Implementation Plan recommendations. There's an additional desire for transit service to downtown, maybe through some kind of shuttle or trolley. Open space. Reduction in open space may be an unintended consequence of any adaptive reuse or redevelopment strategy, so we have to be careful of that. There's a lack of a true, larger civic gathering space to accommodate special events and to serve as a focal point for the community. Downtown character. Looking for consistency across various parts of the downtown, and the perception that downtown is influenced by physical and psychological barriers such as the Fox River, State Street, and the railroad tracks. Cultural and community resources, accommodating existing and new commercial facilities, was cited frequently as an important issue. And then special events are creating some strain on parking and restrooms. Maintaining an appropriate mix of business is important. The lack of consistent appropriate hours for business in the downtown is also important. Next steps in the process, very simply, is preparation of a draft plan that will be go through the review process, and we'll be reaching out to the entire community and stakeholders to get the views and comments and perspectives on the ideas that are set forth in the draft plan. The plan will actually consist of a number of components: downtown boundaries and growth framework, land use and infill redevelopment strategies, parking and transportation. Will be an open space plan, beautification and urban design framework plan, a government facilities plan, conceptual development plans and illustrations, and a plan implementation strategy. And once we've received all of the public comment on the draft plan, we'll then, and only then, will we move forward into a final plan preparation, public hearing, and adoption phase. So that's all that I have. And if there are questions, I'm available.
The questions from the committee? Or anyone in the audience? Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to ask, did perchance the crosswalk signs that we have on 3rd Street were stimulated from this start of this plan? Or?
Well, actually, as it turned out, that was something that the bikeway Bike Pedestrian Committee had been working on actually for the last year or so. So it really came out of that group.
Thank you.
I might add that there's something universal. I've traveled a little bit this summer, and I've seen that same identical sign in a number of different states. So it may be that this will now become a universal sign. So this is good. Lots of states have similar rules to Illinois, it appears. Thank you. Alderman Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've seen those same signs in other cities also, and I think that it's a real benefit to our community that we have a few on 3rd Street. I would hope we could have more, and I would hope that people would obey them, and if not, receive the due reward. And I don't think we can ever get them on Route 38 because it's a state highway, but some people do have difficulties crossing there. I know we do have the stoplight aids where you can push a button and you get the opportunity to cross on a white light. And a lot of people see those, not everybody does, but that'll just take time and better signage maybe. Thank you. Great report, Dick.
Thanks.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Dick, what is the timeline then for the master plan? When do you expect this to be?
Well, our goal from the outset was to complete it by the end of the calendar year, and our schedule is flexible in terms of just making sure that everyone that has an interest or wants to be involved in the process is involved. But as I said, we've got our product being delivered on the draft next month, to be followed by a downtown master plan committee meeting, probably be in early October. And thereafter, once their review is complete, we'll be seeing either late October or November, we'll be seeing the plan in a mode where it'll be out to the public for review and comment.
Thank you.
Alderman Singer.
Thank you, Chairman. Dick, I didn't see any indication in the study that there is a need for any means of affordable housing in the community.
Well,
was
I went
that broached.
Oh yes, that is a significant part of all of this, and you'll see more on that in the draft plan.
Okay, very good. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Alderman Flanagan.
As a segue, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a segue to Alderman Singer's question, does that mean more rentals? Is that how you're viewing the? Or?
Well, at this point,
you don't.
I don't really have a response for you in terms of the amount or the quantity. We want to be working very closely with our housing task force group as we move forward, and we have a grant that we've received from the county. At least it's been approved. We haven't received the funds yet. To do a housing strategy, and so what I can see is that work effort dovetailing right into this. Correct.
Thank you. Good job.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dick.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 2A B, Recommend approval for right of use of right-of-way and street closure October 1st, 2011 for Black Hat Days, which also includes Pumpkins for a Cure.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Alderman Marks, second by Alderman Hill. Is there any need for discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Against? It's unanimous. Thank you. Would the recording secretary please note that Alderman Marks has shown up, as evidenced by his motion.
Sorry about that being late. Apologize to the chair.
No problem. Moving on to item 2C. Recommend approval for use of right-of-way for downtown charitable solicitations by the Kiwanis Club of Geneva on September 23rd and 24th of 2011. I have a motion.
Second.
We have a motion by Alderman Piper and a second by Alderman Vogelsberg. Is there any need for discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Record that as unanimous, please. Thank you. Moving on to item 2D, recommend approval of use of right-of-way for downtown charitable solicitations by the Knights of Columbus on September 16th to 18th of 2011.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Alderman Flanagan and a second by Alderman Singer. Any questions or need for clarification? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against? Please record as unanimous. Item 2E, recommend approval of temporary and special event liquor licenses for Festival of the Vine, for Gibby's Wine Den, the Geneva Wine Cellar, Fiora's, and the Little Traveler. That Festival of Vine, of course, will be on September 9th to 11th, 2011.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion from Alderman Hill and a second from Piper. Alderman Piper again. Thank you. Any need for clarification? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against? Please record that as unanimous. We have a recommendation for approval of certificate of completion resolution for the Northern Illinois Food Bank stormwater, water main, sanitary sewer, and detention basin infrastructures. May I have such a motion? I have a motion from Alderman Vogelsberg.
Second.
And a second from Alderman Mark.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I believe the reading is for storm sewer, rather storm water.
Thank you. Yes, well, the storm water goes down the storm sewer. I knew it was in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Is there any need for a further clarification? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against? Please record that as unanimous. Item 2G. Recommend draft resolution authorizing rejection of bids for the Peyton Street substation controls upgrade. I have a motion.
So moved.
Seconded.
I have a motion from Alderman Piper and a second from Alderman Kilberg. Is there any need for clarification? Yes, Alderman Dinty. Excuse me? City Administrator? City Administrator indicates we'll go out for rebid. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Please record as unanimous. Item 2G, recommend draft resolution authorizing whoa, we just did that one, didn't we? No, yes. Item 2H, recommend approval of draft resolution authorizing agreement with Charter One Bank for City of Geneva Banking Services. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion from Alderman Vogelsberg and a second from Alderman Marks. Is there any need for a presentation or clarification on this, Ms. McKittrick?
Not
unless there's a question.
I have a question.
Ms. Flanagan?
Well, first of all, I was disappointed that we didn't stay in Geneva and choose one of our banks here, but I can understand maybe that they didn't respond in a favorable way. If you want to clarify that, I'm sure.
I would say that that's correct. And some didn't respond at all, unfortunately.
That is an unfortunate. There's one question I have. The Standard & Poor's rating is an A minus. And I know that everybody's been kind of tied up with this AA rating, and I just wondered if somebody can just kind of speak to that.
What the rating means?
You should introduce yourself first.
Sure. Tom Dahl, the finance manager.
Actually, I didn't have an explanation of the A1 rating, but A-minus rating, but that's not too far below, if that's correct.
No, it's typical even, for banking? Or
They're a little bit different for banking, but obviously AAA is the best, but each one has a different meaning. Let me see if I had it with me. That's not the one I thought you were going to ask.
Sorry.
That's okay. I had a different...
I didn't have an opportunity to call, so...
Pardon me?
I says I didn't have an opportunity to contact you.
Oh, yeah, because so I
would have...
I thought you were going to ask about... Somebody was going to ask about the Tier 1 capital, and I was all prepared for that.
Well, you can tell us about that.
Yeah, that was my question, so go ahead.
Yes?
City Treasurer?
City Treasurer, Pat McQueenie. On the credit rating front, the A-minus is still a very strong rating.
Okay.
What you've had is a lot of banks have been downgraded since the financial crisis in 2008. Charter One is owned by Royal Bank of Scotland, RBS, which is very strong. They had their troubles. In fact, they're owned, a good chunk of them is now owned by the UK government. So, but they are very strong. And
so we shouldn't be concerned about the A-minus rating?
The A-minus, no. I mean, there are higher-rated banks out there, but they've all kind of dropped a bit over the last couple of years.
And is it because of the fact of the downgrade from the U.S. portion of it, or no?
No,
it had no effect on it?
No.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Sure. I believe it's correct to say that the overall impact of this resolution is that it will put most of the city's financial transactions into a single bank and reduce our overall banking rates, we believe. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Bank transaction charges are not an insignificant part of our budget.
No, they are not.
Clear an awful lot of checks through the city.
Yes, we do.
Utility services, etc. Mm-hmm. Are there any further questions? Mr. Marks?
There were two options in here. One was to earn the interest on all deposits. The other one was to waive the monthly fees for the course management service. Which one have we decided that? Or?
Yeah, the keeping the minimum balance and waiving all the fees, because then that would also allow me to invest idle funds above that minimum balance.
Okay. I didn't see that. I saw the options. I wasn't sure if I could find where.
Yeah, no.
Okay. And you're going to be able to make the deposits, it looks like, right from the finance office with the check scanning at this point, which should save us a lot of time also.
Right, which we just started doing a few months ago.
Okay.
And
that
has, it saves us a lot of fees and a lot of time. It's nice to be able to deposit those checks right away.
They clear a lot quicker. Mm-hmm.
Yes, they do.
We have a representative from Charter One in the audience, if anyone has a question directly to Charter One. You could at least come up and introduce yourself. We're pleased that you submitted a good bid.
Good evening. My name is Sean Durkin. I'm Vice President of Government Banking for our Chicago, Illinois office. I'm housed in DuPage County at the Hinsdale office, and I would be the direct liaison for the City of Geneva and Charter One Bank.
So we're not the only city that you handle?
No, that's correct.
We
did include a list in our proposal of all of our current new relationships dating back for the last 2 years.
Thank you.
And just one point of clarification, somebody had mentioned about our ownership and our tie-in with the Royal Bank of Scotland. That is true. The Royal Bank of Scotland does own Citizens Financial Group. Citizens Financial Group is a subsidiary of the RBS Group, and we're a part of that. And Citizens Financial Group operates on the East Coast as Citizens Bank. If you're familiar with the Philadelphia Phillies at Citizens Ballpark, that's our sister bank. And in the state of Illinois, Michigan, and Ohio, we operate as Charter One. And the old Charter One of Chicago, just for a history lesson, is the old St. Paul Federal that we all grew up knowing and probably had mortgages through at some time in life.
With banks, you can't tell the players without a program, for sure.
It's true.
History lesson.
Yeah.
Any further questions from the audience? I'll ask for the vote then. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Please record. It's unanimous.
Nice job, Tom.
Thank you. This is going to help us a lot. I can see.
We move on to item 2I. Thank you, gentlemen. We move on to item 2I. Recommend draft ordinance zoning ordinance text amendment to allow massage therapy as a permitted use in above ground floor spaces in the B3 district and as a special use in below ground floor spaces fronting 3rd Street in the B3 business district. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion from Alderman Piper and a second from Alderman Hill. Any need for clarification on this? Pretty straightforward. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Please record that as unanimous. Item 2J, recommend draft ordinance authorizing annexation agreement pertaining to a portion of Prairie Green Preserve. I have a motion, please.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Alderman Flanagan and a second from Alderman Dantino. I believe the city attorney has joined us at the podium. I believe the mayor gets to vote on this issue. Is that correct?
It's a recommendation only at this point.
Recommendation.
So at
okay.
the city council level, the mayor would vote on the annexation.
Is there any need for clarification of this particular item? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Please record that as unanimous. Item 2K, recommend approval of the purchase of replacement computers from Dell Marketing, LLP, in the amount of $21,278.76.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Alderman Vogelsberg and a second from Alderman Marks. Is there any need for discussion or clarification? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
Oz got to stay behind.
Please record that unanimous. Thank you.
Go back.
Okay. After the preliminary items, we now come to the main feature. Item 2I, KL, IJKL. Item 2L, recommend draft ordinance amending Title 4, Chapter 2, the Liquor Control Ordinance, of the City of Geneva Ordinances and City of Geneva Code. What I'd like to do is first start by suspending the rules and have a presentation by the city staff who've done a large amount of work on this, and then we'll have a period of discussion with the committee and possibly audience members before we request a motion. We put the motion on the table if that's acceptable to the council. Hearing no objections, Ms. McKittrick, could you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the sake of our audience, I'd like to give a little bit of background because they don't have the benefit of the paperwork that was provided to the council in the packet. Just to explain, to set up the presentation, the current City of Geneva liquor regulations have been reviewed by staff and are being recommended for an amendment as proposed this evening. Most of the current liquor code regulations were implemented in 1975. The proposed changes to the current code constitute a comprehensive overhaul of the entire ordinance. Staff in the City Administrator's Office and Police Department began working on the update last fall and formalized the goal of completing the work in the City Administrator's fiscal year 2011-12 goals, which were approved by the City Council. I would like to especially thank Sergeant Frieders, Executive Assistant Gene Fernari, and Administrative Intern Zach Creer, who assisted with this review. Staff, during the review process and research, has spoken with representatives at the State of Illinois Liquor Control Commission, officials from other communities, reviewed numerous other communities' liquor control ordinances, and researched the Illinois State Liquor Control Act. In addition, staff invited the Geneva Chamber Board, individual liquor license holders, and members of the general business community to provide input and feedback regarding updates to the code. Virtually everyone and anyone who wanted to have input into the process was invited to do so. Each suggestion that was made was then considered with regard to the legality, the impact on city resources, the impact on the safety and welfare of the community, and the impact on our business partners. The handouts on the dais this evening in front of you provide additional information regarding the new classifications compared to the current classifications, the liquor education training required from other communities, as well as comparison of fees, some of the research that we have done. The proposed draft ordinance amendments include research and recommendations combined from the mayor, the staff, and the business community over a nine-month period. Tonight's presentation will be made by Police Sergeant Mike Frieders, and I believe we have that up on the screen ready to go. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. I don't know that I've ever been the main event before, so I'm a little excited to be here. Thank you to Mr. Burns, the Liquor Commissioner, to Administrator McKittrick, and obviously Chief Mexen in the audience for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you this evening about our proposed changes to the Liquor Code. Why should we update the Liquor Code? We have had complaints from some of the constituents in the city, and maybe the wordage of complaint is somewhat harsh, but we've also had concerns over the years that people have expressed to us in terms of how can we better apply the code that's on the books to those businesses that at times are extremely different in how they operate. There have been different interpretations of the code's intent. How in 1975, when those older people wrote the code, what did they mean when they wrote that? As one judge said to me once, there's black and white in terms of the law, and then there's the spirit of the law. What did the legislature intend when they wrote it? So some of that was difficult for us to say due to the how old the document was. Our intent and some of the themes that we tried to address throughout the multiple meetings that we had was how can we draft a document that not only allows for responsible service of alcohol along with good business so that our business community can thrive while working under the umbrella of the Liquor Control Commission, which is something that is the oversight that we must follow. It truly is a two-tier approach where we have to follow the guidelines that are set up by the state of Illinois. There was some confusing, conflicting, out-of-date language, obviously, when you write a document in 1975, which is after I was born, in case you're wondering, that there could be some misinterpretation of that. So we wanted to make sure that we could bring things in line. And you can imagine a document from 1975, literally we would just add chunks to the, in pieces. So it was somewhat disjointed in some aspects, difficult to read and have to flip through at times. It's not unsimilar to when I first began in law enforcement. The state of Illinois used to have separate chapters for different offenses. So criminal offenses were in a chapter 38. Vehicle offenses were in chapter 95 and a half. The state made a big push to put them together so they were in one giant compiled statutes. And that's similar to what we did here. How can we refresh this, make it easier for the end user? Obviously, there's been changes in state statutes. The law, as Mr. Radovich would, I'm sure, tell you, is a living document. It changes. It moves. It lives. It breathes. Depending on case law, depending on new laws that come out of the books, it does change from time to time. So it's important for us to stay on top of that. We tried to remove non-existent classifications. We tried to update things, consolidate things where we could, but provide more definition where people had expressed confusion. So those are some of our themes, what we tried to accomplish. As the administrator commented, it was one of their top goals for the fiscal year, something that we wanted to accomplish. Funding was through staff time, so it was something that was really at no cost. Our completion date that we set was August 31st of 2011, which really is a pretty aggressive timetable in terms of redoing the entire law that we're looking at. If you remember a few weeks ago, Governor Quinn signed into law what is called Zach's Law, if you saw it in the news, where you have to now secure the large soccer goal posts that the Park District, the high school, all use for soccer games, competitive soccer games, from an incident back in 2003 where a six-year-old was killed after one of those soccer goals fell on him. So it took almost 8 years to get legislation to make that law where they have to secure soccer goals down for a child that was killed. It only took us less than a year to write the Liquor Code. So I think we really did a lot of work in a limited amount of time. An instructor in a class I was at once asked, how do you eat an elephant? And I said, well, one bite at a time. And he said, you're going to be eating elephant for a long time. Mm-hmm. He said, if you find a bunch of friends who also like to eat elephant, you can accomplish that task in a shorter amount of time and be much more efficient at it. So that's exactly what we did in writing this document. How many people can we effectively involve where we can break this thing down and attack it and get it done more efficiently? So we included the city staff, the city administrator's office, the police department, as well as the city attorney, and obviously our liquor commissioner. We tried to do as much research as we could. What kind of laws are already out there on the books? How can we use something that's already working without having to reinvent the wheel? So we looked at a lot of different things out there. We also spoke with those people at the Liquor Commission. How can we write things so that it's going to be in compliance with what they're looking for? They, at the Liquor Commission, frequently review their state statutes and what they call trade practice policies. So yearly they have a set of practices that they'll re-examine to make sure that they are still applicable or if they need updating. So we were in contact with them to make sure that we were still on the same page. If we had questions, we sought them for clarification, spoke with other municipalities, again, not only their staff but legal counsel, how they were interpreting those same state statutes. And one of the key issues, as always, we've talked about before, is the issue of home rule. So not being a home rule entity, we do have to follow what the state of Illinois looks for. We cannot write things that are less restrictive than what the state says. We can be more restrictive than the state, but we cannot be less restrictive. So that's important for us to remember as we look at this. We work closely with our city attorney, Mr. Radovich, and also, again, with our stakeholders. Who is this going to be? Who's the end user of this thing? Who's going to have to read it and also interpret it outside of our office? The Chamber of Commerce, other license holders, other non-license holders, business holders in the community. We made numerous changes based on recommendations from our stakeholders. So if they had a concern that we felt met our intent, our objective of responsible service with good business, we tried as much as possible to try and incorporate that into the code. There are over 60 license holders. That's about average. I think we might be at 59 now, but it fluctuates. Sometimes we dip below 60, sometimes we go above 60. Off the top of my head, roughly we have about 130 applicants. So of those license holders, there could be multiple people on those applications. So drafting a document that would make all of those people happy, I'm sure, would be nearly impossible. So we tried to address some of those specific issues per business. We have six different classifications of licenses. So each business may have a completely different operation. So we tried as much as possible, again, to look at each specific business application and address it as much as possible. We reorganized the sections of the code. One of the biggest features you'll notice when you look at it is the formatting. It's a lot different than the old code. And some of that is just trying to get things of like nature together so it's easier for you to follow. We had a lot of questions about definitions. What does this mean? What does this mean? So we tried to expand that definition section so it would be easier. If you had a question about your specific business application, what we're trying to say, you might be able to get that addressed simply in a definition. So we increased those while pulling as many as possible from existing state statutes. So we weren't trying to be creative and make something new if we didn't have to. Let's pull it from stuff that's already on the books somewhere, either at the state level or at some other municipal level. Again, we try to mirror as much the state wording, and in fact, we pulled in some of the state wording into our city language so that the two would mirror each other more than they did before, so there would be less question in terms of, does the state issue trump us or is it a city issue? We tried to put some of those issues in the city code so it's all in one document. I tried to clarify some of the license requirements and the application process, who can apply, when they can apply. As much as possible, we tried to consolidate the type, number, cost, and the different classifications. We put them all on a nice table for people to see, and again, tried to break them down to, if we didn't need the classification, maybe get it off the books. If we can combine. If so, if not, then maybe define it further. We created an entire new license classification for our temporary outdoor service. So those events during city-sanctioned festivals, and also temporary licenses. You'll see those are the Class E licenses. There are five of those. The first two, the Class E1, is for a non-for-profit group. So if I have a We Love Sergeant Frieder's group, non-for-profit, and I want to hold a charitable fundraiser, I can apply for an E1 license. We removed some of the restrictions on that E1 license so that it would be easier for non-for-profit groups to apply for that. The E2 license came from our business community. They were looking for somehow to serve alcohol at a non-licensed business. So if I own XYZ Jewelry Store, God bless you, and I want to have a customer appreciation event tonight. I obviously don't have a liquor license. I can't serve liquor to my patrons that come in the door. I can now partner with a bar, restaurant, existing license holder in the community. They can come into my business and serve at my business for a limited time, up to 3 days. That's a new classification that we never had had before. So, and that was in response to the business community that was looking for something like that. Those two licenses are not issued during city festivals or fairs, so that's strictly throughout the year if anybody wants to apply for those. The remaining three temporary licenses, the E3, 4, and 5, are only for city-sanctioned festivals and fairs. We created, I talked about the not-for-profit license for fundraising, and the Liquor Commission now has the ability to authorize live music for those events. Some other highlights. We expanded the licenses for resorts, hotels, motels, bed and breakfasts. We created a new BYOB license. This is something that we've never had before. And this really comes from an incident back in 2006, which wasn't too far from us, over in DuPage County. It was an incident involving an establishment that did not have a liquor license but allowed BYOB. So you could bring in your own alcoholic beverages. The patron who came into the business self-consumed his own alcohol, drank to the point of intoxication, was allowed to leave the business, get in his car, and he got in a tragic car accident and killed two people as a result of the crash. The families of those involved filed suit against the business, and the business contention was that, hey, we don't have a liquor license, we did not serve the alcohol, we are not responsible, we cannot be held liable. The case actually went all the way to the Illinois Supreme Court, and the Illinois Supreme Court ruled that even though they weren't a license holder, they were responsible and could be held liable because they were allowed to drink on their establishment. The business actually paid out a $1 million amount to those families involved. So in terms of what the police department, what we felt was an important issue, this was one that we really wanted to have on the books because it not only protects our business holders and our employees in those businesses, it protects our community, it protects our people who live here, and it protects those far outside of our community. So we wanted to draft something that was on the books to try and regulate that. And really one of the most important components of it is the Bassett aspect, that having a BYOB now triggers the license or that person to have to attend our Bassett class so they're aware of some of these issues. They know the responsibility of that they have to be responsible for their patrons coming into their business. And it is at a minimal cost. I understand cost is always a relative issue, but the cost for this license is only $250. So we tried to keep that at a low cost as well. The outdoor seating license is a new aspect to the code as well. This is an issue that we would have seen progressively over the past few years in terms of our ability to track where people are consuming alcohol on their premises. Initially, when we give a liquor license in the current code, it states in there that you are only allowed to serve basically within your four walls inside the building. We do allow some outdoor service if it's authorized, but we were having difficulty tracking some of those issues. Business X might put a picnic table outside their business one day and not get it cleared through the city, and then over the years we might lose that in the application process. So we wanted to come up with a codified regulation to point out to the license holders, this is the process you need to follow. This is the things that you need to do for your business to meet those restrictions. Simply apply for it, and you'll have a license to serve outside. There also is a minimal cost associated with that because there is going to be an associated city expense with that. We're going to have to inspect those outdoor patios from the city's perspective, and our perspective can change depending on which hat we're wearing. The police department looks at it from a law enforcement standpoint. The fire department looks at it in terms of a life safety aspect. Can people get out of there if there's a fire? In the building code, people look at it in terms of, is it constructed to building code standards? So we want to make sure that all of these outdoor areas are safe for everybody from all three hats of the city. So there is a cost to us to the city. That's why there's a cost associated with that license. We expanded some of the time frame for applications, made it a little bit easier in terms of when people can apply for those licenses. We removed, there was on the books a tasting license, you might remember. It was fairly restrictive, and we didn't get a lot of positive feedback from the business community. We didn't have a lot of people apply for it. So we removed that, and the wording was a little bit conflicting with state statutes. We replaced that with something called the sampling license, something that a packaged goods establishment can apply for, that they'll be designated as an on-premise server and be able to do some wine sampling that some of our business partners wanted to do. We updated license classifications for licenses with breweries to allow for refilling in conformance with the liquor statutes, and we established an upfront fee for new businesses. We wanted at all possible to try and minimize any increases in costs. So if there is an increase in a cost, we tried to apply it to a new business that might come in and apply. Therefore, an existing business holder wouldn't have to bear the brunt of those costs. So a majority of the businesses may not see any increase at all if they don't make any changes in their license or have an outdoor serving area like we talked about. And we try to simplify the proration of licenses. If people apply for a license mid-year, three-quarters of the year, try and make it more streamlined in terms of that application process. We added some sampling licenses, and again, this is straight out of the state code. The state says what typically people refer to as wine tasting, the state recognizes that as wine sampling. And the state is pretty specific on when you can sample things. If I am a on-premise retailer, so that means I can serve people in my building, they can drink in my building, I'm allowed a little more leeway in how I can serve my alcohol in compared to someone who is a packaged good retailer and only can serve stuff where I can consume at home. If I can only serve alcohol for people to drink at their home, I can give no more than 3 1-ounce pours of wine. That's it for that person for the entire day. If I can serve people in my business, I can serve up to 4 ounces of wine, irregardless of quantity. So I could buy a sampling package, drink my 4 ounces of wine, purchase another package, and drink another 4 ounces of wine. So they give a little more leeway to those on-premise retailers. And there's been a lot of confusion about that. So we put that wordage into the code to try and make it simpler. We had a lot of inquiries, and I think still continue to get a lot of inquiries about giving away alcohol. And the state is extremely clear on this issue. They do not like, do not recognize, do not allow people in a retail establishment or a business environment to give alcohol away. They want people to pay for drinks somehow. It's a form of regulating service so that people don't drink as much. It's safer for people in terms of, again, regulation. But they don't allow us to just give alcohol away. So there's no way that we could build that into the code. We did clarify this was an important issue where we've always required dram shop insurance, but it really wasn't spelled out specifically in the code. So we put it in there to ensure that people are aware they have to carry the insurance to protect their employees in doing business. And we kind of tweaked the BASA requirements, which we're going to talk about here in just a minute. We authorized a 1 hour earlier start. We started that process a couple weeks ago where we changed it in the current code. That translates as well to the new code. So Those temporary licenses, those e-classification licenses, are allowed to serve 1 hour earlier, starting at 11. We added the state provision to allow transportation of resealed wine home. That's courtesy of Governor Blagojevich. That's the state statute that you can purchase a bottle of wine during a meal, and if you don't finish it, they can reseal it in a sealable bag provided by their distributor, and you can take it home in your car. We've included that wording in the city code as well. We've created a requirement to cordon off permanent outdoor areas where alcohol is served. Again, where the fire department looks at it in terms of how easy it is it for people to get out in an emergency, the police department looks at it in terms of how can we keep these people in so it's easier for our sellers, our servers, to keep track of who's being served and regulate their service. So we want some constriction there. We like those barriers to keep people in. Basset provisions. We've been a Basset community since, I believe, 2000. Our first classes that we taught were in September of 2000. Since then, as one of the original Basset instructors, we taught about 1,800 people in the city how to responsibly serve alcohol. This is off the State Liquor Commission's website. This is the purpose, as from the state, of what Basset's designed to do. It's an informational process for sellers and servers of alcoholic beverages about the effects of alcohol and drug abuse. It provides necessary skill development and techniques in order to identify and intervene patron use problems. What we talk about in the Basset class is being an alcohol manager. How can you manage a patron's service so they don't get overserved and they don't leave your establishment intoxicated, which is against state statute? We want to try and reduce the incident of patron misuse, but mostly through responsible service of our patrons. How can we manage that service? And another big component is identification. How well can we identify those patrons to make sure that they are of age and should be drinking? I believe our Basset slide says there's a study that says about two-thirds of people who buy alcohol under age use their own fake ID. So the identification process is important. How can we get our servers to get that ID and make sure it's a good ID and that the people that should be drinking are getting the alcohol and those that are not should not get it? In 2010, when we did our periodic spot checks, we just kind of did an informal poll of our license holders to see how many of them are attending our program. And of the about 616 servers who work in the city of Geneva, that's sellers, servers, bartenders, managers, only about 57% are attending our class. Those numbers were probably a lot higher when we started in 2000, but with the increased use of the internet, the state of Illinois now recognizes an online program. So we found that about 26% of our servers aren't even attending our class, they're just doing it online. The unfortunate byproduct of that is they don't get any of the city of Geneva language, which I think is important and key for doing business in the city of Geneva, because we may do things completely different than any other town, and every other town is allowed to do things differently by their own statutes. So them attending our class is extremely important. You'll see in what was provided in your packet titled Liquor Training Required, you'll see that most area municipalities there listed require Basset of their people that have licenses. One community, Wheaton, actually requires that they attend their own class only. You are only allowed to attend the Wheaton class. You're not even allowed anything else. So it is something that is extremely important and is recognized around us as an important aspect of responsible service. If you have a problem, one of the best ways to address it is through prevention and education, and I think we try really hard to do that with our Basset program. Some areas covered in the Basset program: physical properties of alcohol drugs. What is it? Most people know what alcohol and drugs do to you, not all. Some of those physiological effects, what does it do to people? Some customer prevention and intervention techniques. How can we, again, slow people down? Illinois statutes are covered. We talk about local ordinance. We talk about DUI laws, things that may affect those license holders or those servers. The proper identification techniques is a large, large component of that. The police and paramedic responsibilities, policies, expectations, some of those things that we see that we can relay back to them, because a lot of times we work closely with our business community. the dram shop laws, liabilities. We talk about the insurance requirements, the civil liabilities associated with owning a liquor license. And then, like I said, we talk about in great length about the local ordinances specific to us here in Geneva. It is not a requirement to have Bassett. It is a strong recommendation through the Liquor Commission that they really, really push the program, but it is not a requirement. It is not a state mandate across the state. So you will find communities that do not have it. Some recommended changes in the proposed ordinance. To remove the current requirement of all employees of a licensee to be Bassett Trade. The old code had wording in it where it said all employees had to be Bassett Trade. We kind of changed that a little bit to have it so that it was all employees responsible for selling or serving alcohol. So it was more specific to those people with that being their job responsibility. We included on the second point there those that check identification to also be Bassett trained, because a lot of times businesses will use that bouncer, that ID checker at the front door as a filter. Well, we wanted to pull that ID checker into the Bassett program, one, to get him in and see that ID section that we have to better that person at doing their job, but two, in a licensee on a very good night, if you are firing on all cylinders, it is still a very difficult task to be an alcohol manager for someone drinking alcohol in your establishment. Because I, as a Bassett instructor, can't tell you how much alcohol any person can drink before they hit a level where they are intoxicated. We talk about generalities. We talk about physiology. We talk about the laws, and we talk about things for them to look for. But it's all a judgment call on those signs and symptoms that they look for to look for impairment. So it is an extremely difficult task. So that's why we try and draw as many people into that as possible. All of the servers, so that we're all watching out for each other. The managers, so they're watching all my employees to make sure they're doing the right thing. That bouncer at the door, maybe that can be a filter too, to keep those intoxicated patrons out of the business so we don't have that issue. So we want to pull as many people into the process as possible. The exemption. Require at least one Bassett trained manager on site at all temporary license events. That would be those Class E licenses that we talked about. So we did make some consolidations and loosen the restrictions in terms of those temporary Class E licenses, where we only are going to require now one person on premises to be Bassett certified as an oversight of the entire event. This we are doing on a limited trial basis to see what impact, if any, that it has on the safety of the event and any other rippling effects that we might see in terms of a police response or a public safety issue. But that is, you'll see that in every section where it mentions Bassett, the top part says, any license holder of an A, B, C, D, F has to have those sellers, servers, managers, ID checkers, Bassett certified, and then it says under that, Class E licenses, those only special event licenses, must have one person outside Bassett trained. Something that we are considering to help bridge the gap, because I believe there will be a gap in terms of those people that are serving not having the same level of training that everyone else in a licensed establishment has, maybe a specific training program for our temporary license holders that talks about the effects of alcohol, the licensing section, and some other key issues. So it won't be a full Bassett, but we might have to develop a program to bridge that gap. Some suggestions that we did not include in the new code. Sell beer by the can, 16 ounces or less. You'll notice in the code under the packaged goods establishments, there's a provision that says you can't sell a can of beer in anything less than a six-pack. That's not verbatim, of course. I'm just rallying off the top of my head. That is something that we felt we wanted to include, that we didn't want single can beer sales. So that was a change you'll notice in the law. We reduced the special event licenses from 15 days to five or less days, so we loosened some of those restrictions. allow discretion of the liquor commissioner or assistant liquor commissioner to create an on-demand liquor classification license. We increased the number of catering licenses, so we tried to bolster that in case we can get more people to apply for those. We removed the requirement that the premises located below ground level must have visible access of a window by at least 8x8. That was something we had looked at. It was in some of our previous drafts, but that was removed. Or, I'm sorry, we left that in.
Okay.
So we left the window in. Thank you. The window provision was left in with the understanding for new businesses coming in. So if I want to have an establishment and have a below-grade, underground, basement-type establishment, there has to be some way for us, the police, to see in after hours to ensure compliance with the laws. So that's why we left that in. I apologize. Permit to sell at retail any place where alcoholic liquor is sold for consumption off-premises before 9 a.m. We did not change that. And charge the Park District for their D7 license. Currently in the existing code, we don't charge the Park District for their license. In the new code as well, we do not charge the Park District for their license. It is not a big demand license. It has not been issued in, I can't even say how many years, but there is no charge for them if they decide to file for it. Going forward, what we would recommend is approval of the amendments as proposed to you for the new proposal of the liquor code. We would recommend monitoring of those amendments. We're going to keep track of those. How are they working? Are they effective? Keep a dialogue with our business community, with our stakeholders. Are they working for those people using them every day? There may be further amendments that we need in the future. Maybe we have done something that we don't know and isn't working. We may have to come back and alter that, but that's, again, something we will keep track of. Recommend development of a local alcohol training course for temporary license holders so we can bridge that gap. And we intend to develop and provide educational outreach of amended code to our business community. We want to have a public forum similar to what we had earlier, I believe last year, when we talked about the liquor code. We intend to do that again, to send that out to our license holders, explain the new code to them. It actually is coming at about a perfect time of year because we at the police department visit our license holders at least once a year just to stop in and do spot checks. So we're coming up on that time of year where we're going to do our yearly spot checks. We plan on personally serving each license holder once this is passed, a notice to say this is what's passed, here's a link where you can go to find the new code and do any research that you want to do on your own. So really the timing of it is kind of working out for us. I would be more than happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Sergeant Frieders. But before we have questions, I would first like to thank all the businessmen who cooperated with the city staff on this, especially the Chamber of Commerce. I see Ms. Jean Gaines, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, in the audience. Is there any words you'd like to say, Jean, tonight? We certainly thank the Chamber and its members for their cooperation in this.
That was an excellent presentation, Mike. First, I'd like to thank the city staff and especially Mayor Burns and Mary McKittrick for her cooperation and the opportunity that we had to review and comment on the proposed ordinance. We had a committee review the draft, and actually we selected Joe Stanton to be our spokesman, and I wanted to tell you why we invited him to do that for us. First of all, he has experience as a license holder, as a business operator. He is most familiar with the current ordinance, and he has looked at the proposed ordinance. I think he and Mary are the experts in this area. Most importantly, he is objective because he doesn't have a stake in this. So he is going to speak for us tonight. Joe Stanton.
Thank you, Ms. Gaines. Joe?
Good evening. When I first looked at the proposed changes, I sat down and went through the old ordinance and the new ones, and I came up with about four pages of, you know, questions and comments. And Mary put aside an hour for us, and 2.5 hours later, we finally left that meeting with a lot of things being, you know, cleared up. Reading a liquor, you know, code is difficult. You know, you get a question on page one that's answered on page seven. So we spent quite a bit of time seeing where we were with these comments. we were then given a revised liquor code, and I sent in two more pages by email of questions and comments and things we would like them to be considered. All of this stuff was addressed each and every time we put it out there, even things that we were told no to. We were given very, very lengthy explanations on, you know, why we were told no. If anybody read the liquor code in your packet, it's 42 very boring pages, mm-hmm. and they're very confusing, and you have to read them, you know, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth time. We pulled out, sample codes from different towns that have festivals to see what worked, what changes, and this was not a problem unique to Geneva. This has happened all over the place, and this was a big change from 1975 to now. This code is nothing like the original code. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the chamber's involvement in the issue, but first, on behalf of the chamber, I'd like to thank the city staff for allowing us to become involved in this whole process. The chamber appreciates the opportunity we were given to make changes, and we were given considerable opportunity to make changes. And we'd like to acknowledge the incredible job that was done by staff in the police department to address the concerns of the business community, and we appreciate their willingness to look at the code in the future to see what problems may arise and how it may have to be, adjusted. And lastly, before any questions, I'd like to tell you that the chamber strongly supports this ordinance as proposed, and we'd really like for you to acknowledge all the hard work the police department and staff put in by voting in favor of it.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah. If you'll sit in the front row next to the sergeant, I'll open it up to questions first from the committee. Is there anyone in the committee that has questions or comments? No one's willing to start.
No, I will.
Ah, Alderman Flanagan.
Just a question on the E1. You have NA, and you would say not available. Will those be provided at a later time, or? Oh, I'm sorry, on the cheat sheet.
There's a document in your packet that lists.
Titled, fees yep. and numbers of
that's one of my favorites that was created, and I can take no credit for it because I'm not that creative. But it allows you to look and see by classification the existing license holders that have it. So for that particular one, since we haven't had any applications to our non-for-profit license, what would have been a temporary license? There's no one to compare to. That's why it says it.
I meant there was no fees or anything there's, attached to it.
There's no renewal fee.
It's a
temporary license.
It's current annual.
So it would be on an event basis. It wouldn't be an annual renewal. Is that
every application is an initial application?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're looking at? The E1.
I'm looking. Yeah, I'm looking
at
the
cheat sheet.
And you go
across to NA.
Yeah, all the NAs.
The and that final column.
That column says new annual renewal fee.
Oh, I see.
And there is no renewal on a special event.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying. That event's a flat fee of
$100. Yeah, I understand that now.
Alderman Singer?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at 428 regarding license application requirements, and there are other issues as well dealing with the question I am about to ask. And it indicates that in the case of an individual, the full name, age, and address of the applicant, I couldn't find an actual application for one to achieve a license. I looked through the city code. I couldn't find it. Should there not be a restrictive as to the age of one applying for that application?
For the liquor license?
Yes.
We do an extensive background on all of our applicants. So we obviously wouldn't issue a license to someone who wouldn't be allowed by age. But that's not specifically spelled out in terms of in the language of the application itself. That's available through the city administrator's office when they apply.
So if one were 18 or 19 or 20 and sought an application, it's possible they would be accepted?
Mr. Chairman, I can answer this if you'd like.
Yes, Ms. McKittrick.
This language is the same as our current language. We did not change this. the state statute regulates that the person applying must be 21.
Okay.
So we're mirroring state statute language, but we always have.
I see.
But the state regulates that they would have to be 21, obviously, in order to sell liquor.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that clarification.
And I would only add again, we extensively investigate those people before they get a license. So we check out their criminal background to make sure those things that are listed don't apply.
I'm aware of that.
And then check them out thoroughly.
Okay, very good.
I just follow up Alderman Singer with a question, a similar question on the same section, which is it requires 1 year city residency. Is that in the state code, and why do we require it?
That for a person, that is not necessarily in the code. It's not in the state statutes. It can be in municipal codes.
And why do we require it? It seems if we have a well-known restaurateur in St. Charles who wants to move himself to Geneva, I would be more than happy to have him apply for a liquor license in Geneva.
This is for a person.
Person.
This is for a sole proprietorship. And we have, I'm not even sure if we have any sole proprietorships. We have none. They're all filed under corporations.
Okay. Yeah. I see. Okay.
There's no similar. It's too big. Similar requirement for a corporation, limited partnership, limited liability company or partnership.
My invitation still stands to restaurateurs in St. Charles.
Not borrowing.
And Kilberg has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question in regard to 4210O.
I don't have the old code in front of me, so you can shoot it off and I'll see if I can.
That relates to holders of liquor licenses not being eligible to run for elected office in the city. And I guess I'd be interested in Mr. Stanton commenting on that as to what the opinion of the Chamber of Commerce might be as relates to that. We have 60 licenses in the city. And how closely is this adhered to? I guess my question is, if you're serving on the Park District, and essentially if they're granted a temporary license, would a member of the Park District be in violation?
No, this only applies to aldermen and city council. This does not apply to other elected officials.
But I meant, though, let Joe answer first.
You know, I can give you my opinion about it. A line has to be drawn at some point. Who should be allowed to, who shouldn't be allowed to. And there's always the opportunity to step aside if you have a personal involvement. I think if you have a liquor license in town, that the number of times you would have to step aside would be way more than anybody else. Obviously, voting to add new liquor license, to somebody else would affect you. Festivals would affect you, allowing people in during festivals. Allowing a sidewalk sale or not allowing a sidewalk sale in this area or that area. I think the number of times that they may be asked to step aside, is a lot greater than, another business profession. And I believe that's why there's so many towns that have it. And when we researched, quite a few towns, on behalf of the chamber to see what their law said, and this is in a lot of them, I think it's where most people just decided to draw the line because of the amount of times they'd have to excuse themselves for city business.
Mr. Chairman, if I might also add, this is not a change. This is our current ordinance as it stands right now.
Does the state of Illinois allow it, though? In fact,
the state has recently allowed that change. If you want to make a change, we're not recommending that the city change due to the likelihood of conflict of interest issues.
Now, would this apply also, for instance, if your spouse owned held a liquor license? In other words, if you held a liquor license and your spouse, let's say, would serve in elected office on the city council or was mayor, would that apply as well?
It depends on how you file your application. As a sole proprietorship, then I would say yes, because your spouse is entitled to your property. As a corporation or a limited liability corporation, then no.
Okay. Thank you.
I also questioned it, seeing, seeing as how I've served with probably more members of the council than anyone else, and I certainly have, there's not a single one of them I would not trust with a liquor license. I wouldn't want them to be liquor commissioner, but that's different. Are there any other questions? Alderman Hill.
Actually, I think it's more restrictive than that because the prohibition says not involved directly or indirectly. So I think it's a very case-by-case proposition, and indirectly can have broad ramifications.
How much is it the discretion of the liquor commissioner, who has, I believe, according to the section, quite a bit of discretion of interpreting things like moral character and which I, is moral character a term of law that's well-defined?
Moral interpretude.
I worry about things in here which require the liquor commissioner to do things which are not well-defined.
Most of the applications are first vetted out by the police department and the various investigations through state agencies that the police department does, including fingerprinting in some cases, will disclose if there are certain violations, either felony or other kinds of violations that would make you ineligible for a license. So before it even gets to the mayor to make that determination, the police department's investigation is going to disclose those.
Sergeant Frieders, did you want to add to that?
No.
Mr. Chairman, again, I would just emphasize that this is our current language. It also mirrors state statute language, and we're not suggesting changes to it.
Alderman Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm also disappointed that that is one of the stipulations or ordinances, but I'm not going to dwell on it very long. I think we've discussed it enough. I think we do have honest people that are business people who are involved with liquor who could excuse themselves from decisions, but that's enough said. I do want to make a mention about the Bassett training, Sergeant, and commented to you a few minutes ago before the meeting. Because of the experiences I had last year during the Festival of the Vine and the lack of understanding on my part about what was going on. We had a discussion one of the days there during that event, and as an ex officio member of the Board of the Chamber of Commerce, I've heard many comments there. I think that the city administrator and the police department did a wonderful job in reviewing the ordinance and making the changes to make it much easier for the local businesses to be successful and to abide by the laws, and that it's going to be much more understandable to comply with the laws that need to be enforced. I knew that there was going to be this discussion tonight, so decided to find out more about this Bassett training, and didn't realize that Sergeant Frieders is going to be on vacation at the time that I decided I wanted to take the Bassett training myself, and decided that, let's see if I can do it at the police department. So to make sure that there's no question about any assistance from my more brilliant wife to give me the answers during the testing, so I decided to see if I could get a desk at the police department and take the test by through over the Internet. Lo and behold, I had a chair at Sergeant Frieder's desk, and he didn't leave any of the answers in any of the drawers or underneath the table or anything like that, thank God.
Actually, they were in my desk.
Well, I didn't look. I figured they'd be wired anyway.
Moral character you were tested.
That's right. Yeah. And it was quite an experience. It took me longer than it should have, and I didn't understand how to take the test at first. But lo and behold, after a long time, I was able to pass. I do understand it better. But I strongly recommend it. I hope that I can work it into my schedule to take the test that the, not the test, but the, not again, for God's sake, but the class that is put on by the police department, because then I will be able to understand better what the Geneva interpretations and the regulations happen to be. And I think, but anybody who wants to get basset training, I strongly recommend that individually or employees of various businesses take it through the Geneva Police Department, and you'll understand it a lot better and pass it faster than I did.
We are extremely proud of our basset program. There's a reason why we've taught it since 2000 is because we think it's valuable. We get a lot of positive feedback from it. What we found over that past 11 years is that generally the crowd that comes in can be somewhat hostile. Those people that have to attend by our ordinance or they can't work here sometimes are not paid. They just are there on their own time. Some people are like everybody else. They have to go to their other job. They come to our class. It's a very long day for them, so they come in sometimes with a little bit of hostility. But we continually, over time, get the same feedback at the end. We love your program. You've done a great job in presenting it. We're so glad that we came. So we're very, very proud of it and very, very enthused to continue to provide that feedback to our business community.
So please advertise it a little bit more.
It's on our website, all of our classes.
Thank you, sir.
And we recommend that our businesses at least send managers periodically to see, because we try to stay current, give them new updates, send your managers through so you can get refreshed, be current on things that are on the books.
Alderman Vogelsberg.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Sergeant, I just had a question about the e-licenses. Is that what would cover if a business, a retail business that has no liquor license, they would want to partner up with somebody who does? That's what that covers?
That would be the E2.
The E2.
Throughout the year. Now, if a business retailer wants to partner with a liquor establishment during a festival, then that would be the E5. So
okay.
Then that's the one specifically during the festival that allows that that licensed holder to come onto my business and serve alcohol there. So
okay.
We can do both, actually, during a festival and during non-festival times.
And I think that's a great change because since the state won't let people provide alcohol, I think that's a nice workable thing for the businesses. So thank you for that.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add to that, but businesses still can't give alcohol away.
Right.
Just for clarification.
Yes.
Okay.
They can't. You mean, so they have to, you have to chart the,
there has to be
let's say it's the caterer?
Has to be a point of sale.
Gotcha.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Before I go to a second round of questions from the council, I think I'd like to open it up to the audience. Is there anyone who'd like to make a comment or ask a question? Please step forward. Don't be shy. Joe wasn't shy. He's basically a shy person. No takers? All right, Alderman Flanagan.
Just a question now that came up out of my a question came up just because Mary mentioned that there was that you still had the charge for the alcohol.
Correct.
Do you have to have a certain cost?
No.
Okay.
We don't set a price point. So each business is allowed the discretion to set their own price points, however much they're going to charge for it.
Okay.
However, two words of caution.
I'm sure there will be.
One, the happy hour provisions, which have been on the books for decades, restrict how people serve, when they serve. One of those restrictions says that if you're going to have a drink special, it has to be for the entire day, and it has to be for all patrons that come through the door. So you can't limit it between the hours of like 4 and 5 to try and draw people.
You can't do that?
You can't do that. So you have to have a common price point for the entire day. So you'll see businesses advertised for dollar draft night, dollar beer night.
Oh,
really,
I
that's,
see. Yeah, that's
that has
true.
To be all day long. Number two, your pricing should, again, in the state's eyes, be a component of safe service. So if you're serving your drinks for a dime, the state is going to look at that and maybe even beyond the state level, and we talk about this at great length in the basset class, if you were to overserve a patron in your establishment, and I'm only charging a penny for a shot of whiskey, and you drink $2 worth of whiskey, that's a lot of whiskey.
That's true.
So really, it enhances a person's ability to overconsume and get intoxicated. So one of the recommendations we actually make in our basset class is a way to kind of regulate service is stop having tabs. So don't run a tab at the bar. Make a patron drink or pay drink for drink. Those people that may be a little frugal in nature, cheap, so to speak, that will be a component of safe service and help slow their rate of consumption so they don't drink faster.
And I have a question on the Bassett. So you do the Bassett training first, so did Alderman Singer have Bassett training before he took the test, or did he just jump in and take the test?
No, there's an educational tutorial.
So the procedure is to go in there and,
yes,
and do the actual, I mean, you do a presentation or discussion?
No, the online program is, no, that's all right. The online program is recognized by the State Liquor Commission. So they have a program that meets their general Bassett requirements. So the online version that we recommend that's recognized by the state has no component of the City of Geneva aspect whatsoever. So you go through their tutorial online, you take their quiz or test at the end, and then you get your Bassett certificate. But again, you miss out on all the things that are
specific.
And
then what does the City of Geneva then provide? They provide a second level for that?
No, we do nothing outside of that.
Oh, you do nothing?
We recognize...
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
That's fine. We recognize what the state says is a certified Bassett program. So when we come into your business to do a spot check to say if you're Bassett certified, if you have one of those online certificates from that vendor, that meets the state criteria, which we have said is acceptable.
Okay. I just wanted to thank you very much. I thought your presentation was absolutely great, and I really want to commend Ms. McKittrich and staff, and I'm sure, Mr. Radovich, you were involved in this too. I'm hoping that there was some level of that legalese, so to say. And I'm really happy that the businesses were put into the mix too, because they have to live by these rules and recommendations. And we've been we've been over the years encouraging restaurants to come into Geneva, so I was really grateful that we weren't discouraging them by making our rules so tight, mm-hmm, and our ordinances so tight that they would, you know, want to relocate. So I'm grateful that everything came out well.
Mr. Singer?
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. As a segue to Alderman Hill's Bassett training program, I go back a goodly number of years when I was trained under the TIPS program, and I questioned our city administrator regarding that program, and she seems to assure me that I'm safe if I begin serving beer at the Legion tent programs. Can I be assured of that?
Well, the new code actually removes TIPS as a recognized program.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
We, in the current code,
we're caught.
Let me clarify. Do you have another bottle of water? Yes. In the current code, you would be fine. We accept Bassett or TIPS. However, we've removed the TIPS provision from the new code.
Yes, I see that.
We want people to come in. No, you would not be grandfathered, but we'd be more than happy to have you in class. The Bassett program is a little more extensive. The,
yes,
the Liquor Commission recommends Bassett over TIPS. We believe in that also. So that's why we pushed to go strictly Bassett only.
Okay.
The nice thing about Bassett, well, the TIPS program is supposed to expire over time, so I would check. You might be expired.
All right. Ooh. Thank you.
Wasn't that before Prohibition?
It was.
Hey, listen, the state code is 1934 or something. So.
Okay.
I was kidding.
Sure.
We have a question from Alderman.
I think Ms. McKittrich has.
Thank you.
No, I was just going to apologize if you misunderstood my email. I was trying to say, no, we don't allow TIPS anymore in the nicest way possible.
All right.
Sometimes when you're so nice.
It's when you're so nice, we don't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was busted there.
I just wanted to echo what Dorothy said, and Mary, you've done a great job on this, and I think it was wonderful that the business community came together and the chamber. Everyone got a chance to weigh in. Changes were made. When we were reading it this weekend, I think we were thinking, this is so cumbersome, but we didn't have to write it or compare with other people. So it was a great job, and it's a great product. Thank you.
Thank you.
One last chance for the audience. Any comments or suggestions? Please come forward and tell us who you are.
Stabbing. I only had a...
Name, please.
Oh, Jody. Jody Lay from Nash. Mike couldn't be here. He's on vacation, so I have been sent in his stead. And given the glorious task of reading this, very riveting, thank you. It really is well put together, but sometimes a little long. We have a class B1 license, which is issued for restaurants. With the new classifications, it says that a B6 license would be a corkage license. However, it states that is intended for restaurants without liquor licenses. Then in page 39, which would be section 4225, section U, says the BYOB prohibited in licensed premises is unlawful for any licensee and or his or her agent or employee or any commercial establishment to permit any person to consume an alcoholic liquor on the licensed premises that was not purchased from a licensee with a Class B6 license. However, Class B6 license says that it is intended only for people who do not have liquor licenses. So are you stating that with our Class B1 license, we have to additionally purchase the B6 license? I don't really know who that's targeted at.
I can answer that. This is for restaurants that do not have a liquor license.
That's what I thought. But then...
That's correct.
In Section U, it says that... So are our customers allowed to BYO is all I want to know. And do I have to pay you for that ability? Well, that's the impression that I got is that additionally, if I want to allow any customers to BYO, then I would have to pay for the extra license.
No, you do not. Okay. If you have a liquor license, you do not have to buy the BYOB.
Okay.
This is for restaurants who do not have a liquor license, but want to allow their customers to bring in their own bottle.
And is that's a change to the current right now?
Right now, we have no BYOB. Okay.
That's a great amendment. It makes a lot of sense.
Correct.
The only thing is with the B6 license, are they also required to submit Drom Shop insurance?
Yes.
Okay.
They're required to have
go through the same process.
And Drom Shop, the same process, exactly.
Okay.
I believe that's more restrictive than previously. Is that correct?
There was no classification previously.
So it is more restrictive.
I suppose. Actually, I would say it's less restrictive. It allows it. Before, we didn't allow it, period, legally.
Well,
because we didn't have any classification for it.
Okay. Because there are restaurants in Geneva that have been allowing BYO.
I don't want to.
Under the new code, there will be a provision for just that.
Correct. That's correct.
The Thai restaurant. Yep.
Anyone else from the audience? Well, I think we can go back into regular session if someone would like to actually make the motion to recommend the draft ordinance amending Title 4.
Second.
Haven't finished reading yet. The motion I'm looking for is to recommend the draft ordinance amending Title 4, Chapter 2 of the Liquor Control of the Geneva City Code.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion from Alderman Piper and a second from Alderman Hill. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? I believe that's the unanimous recommendation. And again, I thank everyone who has participated in this process. And Mr. Stanton, Sergeant Frieder, thank you for coming up tonight. Moving on to new business. This was obviously new business. This is the first revision of the code in 36 years. But is there other new business that someone would like to bring before the council?
Thank you. I just wanted to remind everyone that this Saturday is the Paul Ruby Foundation for Parkinson's Research 5th Annual Concert for Cure out at Tana Farm, 3 to 10:30. 10 bands and 40 musicians, kid stuff, and a dunk tank. There'll be food, and there our liquor will be. We have a lot of acid-trained people serving, and Joe, number one. And if you want more information, you can go on our website at Paul Ruby Foundation. But it's
uh-huh.
Yes. We're looking for volunteers.
There.
Well, right now we have kids because they're the only ones that were willing to get wet at 3 and stay till 10:30. But it's open.
Oh, God.
I'm not willing to get wet at 3 and stay till 10:30.
How much alcohol can we buy to keep us there? Keep us warm.
Is there any other new business from the audience?
Yeah. I don't know if we can raise that much money.
We're going to change your B6 license.
There you go.
Any other new business? Well, then I would ask for a motion to adjourn until our next meeting on September 12th.
Second.
We have a motion from Alderman Dantino and a second from Alderman Singer.
Okay,
all in favor, say
I won't
aye.
Be here.
Aye.
Aye, aye. Aye. You got the night off. I won't be here then. You're lucky.